Goofy, Crazy, and Weird. That's not the show, but it's the news, according to me. Oh, yeah. Why does the music sound faster today? Am I just slower? Apparently, my brain is slow. The music sounds like it's going faster. Is it just me? I don't know. It seemed like it was going faster there for a second. I don't know. I need to catch up, I guess, with the music here. There was a little glitch there in the recording. I accidentally pushed the pause button. That's a first. I was doing the head banging thing there. accidentally clicked my mouse, and I didn't know where the cursor was. I guess it was over the pause button on the recording there. Very interesting stuff. Anyway, we have, it's Wacky Wednesday, obviously. We have July 31st, last day of July. Summer is practically over. We have 7:47 a.m. in the morning time, and we have Eastern Standard Time, by the way, 2024. And here comes my little kitty. Around the corner, she's so cute. She's the sweet one. She's the one that never bites me. Sometimes she kind of reaches out with her claws to try to keep me from going away from her. But she doesn't ever attack me like the other one does. This is a female. The other one gets a little bit rowdy. He's a little bit like a teenager kind of thing, or a young adult. He's like a college age and a cat's age. Interesting stuff. And we have the one down here that's my basement cat. She was the stray we took in. And she is very appreciative of that, I think. I don't know. Seems to be. We have, it's a wacky world, folks. Wacky is in, you know, chai is in my cup. Almond Joy Creamer, which is good. I don't have a backup cup this morning. I do have a backup cup, but I didn't want to use it. I've only got so much sweet tea left. I didn't want to drink it this morning because it's going to be a long day. I've got theoretically, I'm supposed to be working today. I'm doing working. But I could end up having to do a quick trip somewhere. I don't know how that's going to work out. But I might have to go to Chicago just to be there. I'm going to head that way. I'm going to head to the boat this morning, and it could turn into a very long day. It could be midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning by the time I get home, theoretically. However, I don't think it's going to happen. Could, but I don't think it will. I think they're probably going to do something else with me today. I think they're just going to kind of wash it out because I have tomorrow off, and there's really not much they can do with me today. So I don't. But there's something that could always fall through the cracks, and it's, hey, this is perfect for you to do. So they might just do that. But I can't guarantee that. So I have to be ready to go. So I'm doing kind of a quick show this morning. Just a few points that I want to bring up. Just a few things to think about. And I've got a little biblical perspective at the end that I think I'd like to talk about, because it's I just read a post this morning and it has kind of set me off. It's I would say a former friend, but it's a friend, I guess. It's very rare to see. You typically people go from left to right on issues as they get older. It's very rare. It happens. But it's not typical for people to go from left or from right to left. People tend as they get older, they go from left to right. Usually happens right after they get out of college, they get their first job, they get their first big paycheck. Not necessarily after college, because they're usually working at McDonald's after that. It's when they get that first job, that first real job, they get that first big paycheck, and realize they're only making about half what they thought they were. they look at the taxes, they look at all the stuff that's coming out of their check, and they go, excuse me, what's this? What's all this? Well, that's what you've been voting for and protesting for all the last, you know, 6 years of your life. And the older you get, and the more you realize you're paying in taxes, and the more you're paying out, and the less you're getting for it, the more you realize, hey, this is, maybe government needs to be a little smaller. Maybe government isn't my God anymore. Maybe government isn't my provider, my sustainer. That's not who I depend on from day to day for my sustenance. That's usually the direction people head. And it gets to the point where they are taxed enough already. And by the way, at the Tea Party gatherings that I saw, it wasn't a bunch of young kids, young college kids with blue hair. It was older folks in their 50s and 60s, 70s, 40s. People who had were at the prime of their earning career. Which, that's another thing that blows my mind. People who are in their 20s who think they should be making the money that somebody in their 50s or 60s is making because they don't realize this. This is, folks, it wasn't until, and the same thing with my dad. Maybe this is just a family thing. I don't know. My wife and I are making more money now than we've ever made in our lives. If you'd have told me 20 years ago the kind of income I would have in this stage of my life, it would have changed my perspective on life quite a bit. The anxiety level would have been reduced dramatically. I mean, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It doesn't hurt. It's not a bad thing to try to save money on everything. Don't get me wrong about that. Follow me here with what I'm talking about. But there's almost this act of desperation that you get into, thinking you can't afford things, or you shouldn't, you know, you can't do this, can't do that. The feeling is that it's always going to be that way. That's the worst part of it. It's just that this is the way we got to live. We got to really tighten this up. We got to save this for the future. We got to hold on to that because there's nothing wrong with that except for the fact that it does affect your giving mentality. Your generosity suffers because you feel like you can't give in those situations. There was this one church I was a part of for a while. I was really uncomfortable with this because I was in a position where I was overseeing, actually I had a position at a church, believe it or not. It's a part-time job, but it was a full-time job. I should say part-time pay. Part-time on paper and full-time in reality. And I was told that, you know, that in order for people to be, I was overseeing some other leaders in the church. And I was told that in order to put a person into leadership, we had to make sure that they were actually tithing. 10% of their income needed to be going to the church. Otherwise, they weren't really committed to the church. And it wasn't a real strict thing where we looked at all their income and did a, you know, full audit. But we looked at their giving to see if it was average, kind of the average person makes and what they're giving. I said, you know, there's a problem with this. This guy's given $30,000 a year. Here's the problem. And they were considered the special givers. They were treated differently. In fact, they were given a special meeting at the end of the year. They were given the appreciation meeting where the big givers. I'll tell you what's a big giver. A big giver is a person who makes $30,000 a year, has two kids, a wife, is doing everything he can to get by, and gives $3,000 of his income away. That's a That guy's giving a huge. That's a huge giver. A guy who makes $300,000 a year and gives $30,000? What a joke that is. Oh, you only have $270,000 left to live on. Oh, that's, oh. Man, that must be a struggle. You got one kid. And you get free health care because you're a doctor. And your wife is a doctor. Those people aren't big givers. It's called giving out of your abundance. Now, I think you should be careful with your giving. Don't get me wrong. You have to be responsible. You don't want to just... I've seen people recklessly give. And I mean literally to the point where it destroys their ability to then give anymore. And that's... This is where I really... It's frustrating to see that because I see people doing that, thinking that they walk out and they step out on faith. Look at this. I'm going to do this. I'm just going to give all that away. Well, okay. Hopefully God's telling you to do that, because if he's not, you're being irresponsible. You're not being a good steward of what he, if he is telling you to, then it's fine. Be that. There you go. Back in the poorhouse or whatever. But if he's not, my wife and I we just had a talk with somebody yesterday about setting up a foundation. I talked to somebody about this before, and they said, "Oh, what you're really talking about is a trust." No, the trust. I think trust is different than a foundation. And he was we had to talk to a lawyer about it, and we determined that yes, that was correct. There is a difference between a foundation. A foundation is more or less a 501c3. It's a charitable donation status organization. It's an entity. And it is in and of itself you put money in there. You can't take it back out. A trust is a thing where something's owned by a trust, and it avoids probate. It avoids all kinds of things. And it can live on for a while after you're gone. It's a kind of a way to control your will and funds without, you can have things that you can do things. One of the things we like to do is we like to give, like scholarships to certain schools. There's a school down in Mexico that we support. So it's a ministry school. Another one's there's a couple of nursing schools that my wife is really likes, and we want to be able to provide scholarships and grants and that kind of thing on a yearly basis. Well, if you have money in the bank that's growing, it's based in the scholarships are based on growth. So if the fund grows a certain amount, they get that growth, a certain percentage is given to. It's available for scholarships and grants, so it will vary over time. That way the original funds stay there; they continue to earn. And then eventually that's broken up, and those funds are distributed and based on percentages. So a certain percentage will go to certain things, certain organizations, and someone will manage those things beyond our life. Now, the foundation is totally different. The foundation, it can go on forever. The Nobel Peace Prize, for example, Nobel was he invented dynamite. And he realized that what he invented was going to kill a lot of people. So he had a change of heart. He wanted to promote things for peace. That was originally his intent. It's just in a nutshell. It's not the full history on it. But the foundation, when we establish a foundation like the Arthur J. DeCio Foundation or whatever it is, it's one we have here locally in this area. We have that money, that foundation can go on forever, for as long as it's able to be managed. And the funds that are in the foundation can continue to grow and continue to be, they can continue to endow other things. In other words, you can give an endowment to a college or to a ministry or whatever it is. I know that locally here, Ray Kroc, who had gotten involved specifically in Salvation Army. We have a center here in South Bend. He established, and it was with the Salvation Army, and it was a local community center that the Ray Kroc Foundation paid for, but they didn't just pay for it. I think it was $40 million. I think the facility was $10 million for the foundation, and then another $40 million for endowment. So the $10 million, I think, whatever the amount it was that put up the building, put up the structure, and had everything put in. It was a community center. Very nice. I mean, it was very awesome. What they thought through was excellent. The outside parking, everything there was just excellent. And they also, in addition to that, had the funding to have the thing go for 20 years without having to take any money in whatsoever. Now, donations will stretch that endowment out for a long time, hopefully, if it's not mismanaged. But that's the difference. Now, Ray Kroc's been gone for a while. But this foundation continues to go. And it's the money behind it. And so there's money in the foundation. The foundation then can make investments. It can do all kinds of things. It can continue to grow, and that growth then can provide funding for other things. That is what I would like to be able to do. Now, I don't know if I'm going to live another year, 10 years. My grandpa was 30, it was over 30 more years I could grow. I could live if I lived to be my grandpa's age. My grandpa's age. At least another 20 with my dad's age, and he got hit by cancer at a younger age. My mom was well over that, and my wife's mother and father, her father was tragically killed in an accident, but her mother would definitely live longer, and they were all productive into their 80s. My father was still working before he went to the hospital, still running a business at 82 years old. Making some of the most money he'd ever made in his life in his last 70 to 80 years old. And he didn't really start making any money until he was in his 50s. I mean, he was struggling to get by. He made money. He was successful. He was a very hardworking man. Don't get me wrong. He owned a business and worked a full-time job at the same time and did all this. He wasn't sitting around. I never remember a time when we couldn't afford to eat. I couldn't remember what time when we couldn't afford to do something the family wanted to do. We weren't living a plush, lavish life. Don't get me wrong, but it was. We would take a vacation and go somewhere. Even if we had to all pile into the station wagon, and back when you had the back seat in the station wagon, looking out the back window, that was me. I was back there. No seatbelts, crawling all over the place. Didn't wear a helmet when I rode my bike, which explains a few things. The whole thing about drinking water out of a garden hose. Yeah, well, the kids all just played in everybody's yard. I don't remember anybody having their own yard. There was just one big yard. It was everybody's, and we were all over the neighborhood until the streetlights came on. And you were all dirty, and you didn't dare walk into the house till the end of the day when the door came open and said, get your hiney in the house. and you stayed outside. That's what we did. 110 degrees outside. We just did it. And you drank out of a hose, which also probably explains a few things. So, this generation has no idea, no concept, no understanding of any of that. If you wanted to listen to music, you'd take this big piece of vinyl out of a cardboard folder, put it on a thing that rotates, and hopefully it's the right speed. You got the right kind of needle. It's not dirty. It doesn't skip at all. And you listen to real music. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make here is young people today, they think that they should be there. They should be at that point of 50 to 60 years old of their income. They should be able to live this lavish lifestyle directly out of college. Well, I got this college degree. That was the biggest wake-up call I had when I was a pilot. A budding pilot. A little fledgling. I'd finally gotten my ratings. And I mean, you go through all this work. Get your private license. You work like crazy. Get your instrument rating. And back then it was, you had to get more time before you got your instrument. Now you can go right into your instrument rating. But it used to be you get your private pilot license, and then you had to have 150 or 200 hours before you started working on your instrument rating. Or before you could get your instrument rating. Maybe it was 125, whatever it was. And then so you work on all this, and you get yourself going, and build your time, and then you get your next rating, and then you work on your, then you had to work on your commercial multi rating. And I think what you had to get 250 hours, I think, to get that. So you're constantly trying, you're just flying friends around to go somewhere. Just pay me what you can afford. I gotta build some time. We're gonna share expenses on this trip or whatever. I gotta go fly around, build some time. I learned a lot building that time. I learned that I'm lucky to be alive, first of all. So the adventure of doing all that, you go through all this work and you spend all this money and you do get all this experience, and you finally get that point where you pass all your check rides, and you got another check ride, the single engine, multi-engine commercial license. And now you're a commercial pilot with 270 hours. Got your multi-engine rating. Got 10 hours in a multi-engine airplane. You're ready to go out there and start working. I can get a job now flying a plane. Start knocking on doors. Now, one thing I didn't realize in my particular situation was that there was someone working against me. I didn't know there was a guy behind the scenes who was saying bad things about me because he was also a pilot who was very jealous of me and he was spreading rumors. I did not know that at the time. I didn't learn that for almost 2 years. This was going on for almost 2 years. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get a job. I was knocking on certain doors. Some people, and there were people outside this area that would hire, oh, sure, they'd come along. They were using me. I was having to drive an hour to go work in some places. Sometimes I was doing stuff in other states because nobody would use me. Went to Ohio. Back to one job I had, I'd fly my plane down to Arkansas or Texas or wherever it was, or Indianapolis, whatever it was, and I'd fly around down there. But it was crazy. It was crazy. And then I found out what was going on. It made a lot of sense. And of course that changed everything. But it was locally here. I started banging on doors, and first thing you find out is there's not very many pilot seats in a community typically. The number of seats on a, no matter how big the plane is, there's still only two pilot seats in that thing. And some of them only require one. And I was basically trying to get a job as co-pilot at that time. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll put your name on the list. And when you get some more hours, the biggest answer I got was, when you get some more hours, let me know when you get some more time. Oh, okay. And what was weird was there was other guys that were they were riding around, and they were at the same situation I was, and there were some other guys that were out there working for everybody. They were getting calls all the time. I wasn't getting any calls. Couldn't figure it out. So one day, out of desperation, this one company called me and said, hey, can you come help us out over here? So I went and flew for him. I was in the right seat of a Lear 31. And next thing I know, they call me again. And then other companies started calling me. Well, what I found out was that this one company who was very reluctant to call me because they had heard all the rumors, secondhand rumors. Didn't hear them directly from this guy. Well, then this company was telling other people on the field, hey, this other pilot, he's worked for us and he's fine. And that's not what we've heard. It wasn't anything like what we were told. So the company started calling me. And the next thing I know, flying for several. I was probably five or six different companies that were calling me. Sometimes I couldn't work for a company because I was already working for another company. I was just doing, daytime pilot service type stuff. So the struggle there was that I thought I was qualified and I was out there. And of course, the biggest thing was I didn't have flight time. And sometimes it was their insurance wouldn't allow it. I'd have so much time before the insurance would even cover me in the airplane. So all those things were issues, and I just thought I was going to walk on and get a job now. So I've arrived. Well, that wasn't the case. And I think that's the case of so many college kids. They get out of college, they got that sheepskin. That diploma, for those of you who don't. And they all of a sudden realize, hey, it qualifies me to work at McDonald's because I have no job experience. I have no work experience. But this education that is only theory, it's only bubbles in my head. It's not, there's nothing behind it. I can't prove myself as an employee. There's nothing there. And an employer was not, just necessarily not. Some employers will take you in, maybe as an intern or maybe as a tentative agreement, kind of thing. We'll take you on here and you can do this. You can start cleaning the toilets and then we'll work you up into the VP position eventually. But they think they step out of college. I think they should be the VP in charge of the engineering department. They have no people management skills. They have no people skills at all. I think they're going to be hired and be an activist at their business. Businesses aren't, even though despite some are, most businesses are not into activism. They're into let's produce a product, get it done, sell it, and make a profit. That's what we need. We need to show our shareholders, or potentially just the boss, the owner, or the board, whoever it is, that we can turn a profit. But now what I see is people who are either, they have never done anything their entire lives to advance their situation, to create, to work on their character, they just think that this job needs to drop in their lap. They've worked minuscule jobs most of their lives, and they just stay in that situation. In their off time, they're doing nothing to improve their situation. And the worst thing I see is when people go into debt, they get themselves pinched to the point where, oh yeah, you've got the nice car and you've got a house and you're able to make your payments, pay for your groceries, and you have $50 a month left over. You can afford life. Oh, look at the life you're living. All at the expense of paying the bank. You are a slave to that stuff. If there's a hiccup in the economy, it all goes away. If your car breaks down and the warranty just ran out, you're in a world of hurt. I lived like that for a while. I'm only speaking of this because I've had the experience. And I will never go back to that. Never, ever. It is not a way to live. I'd rather be broke and know it than be living the high life and not realize how broke I was. You just have to understand that perspective. You have to be able to have a grasp on that. So, having said all of that, let's move on. I'm just rambling on with my life now. I've wasted 30 minutes already, and I just don't know, maybe not wasted it, but I was planning on having a 30-minute show, and I haven't even started yet. We have a few things to talk about. J.D. Vance has kind of been in the news lately. It's not going away. This whole thing, they're making a big issue about this J.D. Vance thing. He wrote a book, and apparently in the book he said something about, I think it was in the book or whatever he said. At some point he made a statement about something about childless cat ladies on the left. Now, this apparently become a big issue. That's all I got to say about that. Look, I don't know that much about J.D. Vance. I've been told he's an inside hack. He's an establishment hack. Some people think he's just Nikki Haley, you know, a male Nikki Haley. I just don't get that vibe from this guy. I could be very, very wrong. Now, he used to be a never-Trumper. He was opposed to Trump initially. I think this was back during the primary times. He didn't like Trump. Folks, I didn't like Trump. But I was a Ted Cruz guy, to be quite honest with you. I was all in for Ted Cruz. I voted for him in the primary. I just didn't like Donald Trump's personal life. I had another good brother friend of mine who said, you know, I just think he's a spirit-filled guy that I just total, like, all-in believer. He wasn't playing a game, wasn't just a religious guy. He said, you know, I just think we need a businessman in there. We need somebody from outside the establishment, outside this whole game of everything, just get a businessman in there to kind of get this thing straightened out. This is back in 2015. I was like, well, I respected his opinion, but I just think the guy's a, you know, I just didn't like him. I'll tell you what, I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. Now, would Ted Cruz have made a good president? I believe so. Would he have been the kind of president that Donald Trump was? Absolutely not. Where would we be today? I don't know. That's all straw man idea, straw country idea. This idea that we can continue on with the establishment, I think we're just putting our own blinders on. Now, J.D. Vance says he was wrong, and he's totally come on board with the Trump train, so to speak. Now, I don't think that I don't know. I've never seen him wear a MAGA hat. I've never seen him. I don't think he has bumper stickers on his car. Flags and, you know, yard signs. I don't think he's ever. I'm not that guy. I don't have any of that stuff. I think I own a red hat, but it has nothing to do with that. If anybody wears a red hat now, you're ostracized. There's a stigma that goes with it. I saw a guy the other day, actually it was probably several months ago, had a hat on and said, "Make farming great again." It was a red hat. You'd be surprised the way people look. He said, "I get a lot of looks. People look at me because they just see the make, you know, on there, and they don't look at anything else on the hat. They just assume the guy's a Trump supporter, and they just give him the glare." anyway, this J.D. Vance. I had a friend of mine, like I was saying, this former friend, I guess she's a friend, I guess, made a post and was talking about this whole thing and was going on about it and obviously supports Kamala. And it triggered a bunch of things for me, with regard to this whole thing, because for one, she's listening to the wrong. I wanted to pipe in and make some comments on. Of course, I don't do that on social media anymore. Even if you can be completely correct and completely try to be compassionate with people, and they take it the wrong way. But yeah, I wanted to back up and I did want to say this, and this is the more spiritual side of it. I'm not saying I'm. Because this blasts me in the face as well as anybody else, but the. If you read John, the book of John, if you don't have love, you're not his child. Now, I have to back up and say, okay, does God love Kamala Harris? Does God love Joe Biden? Does God love Barack Obama? Does God love Donald Trump? J.D. Vance? Does God love that person? Well, the answer is obviously yes. Did Jesus die for that person? Absolutely yes. If I claim to love God, if I claim to be his follower, if I claim that his spirit abides in me, then shouldn't the love he has for that individual also abide in me? This is something I tried to preach a sermon on one time, and I think it fell flat. I don't think I got my point across at all, or else people just didn't want to hear it. I just felt like I was talking to a brick wall. Because this is a concept that we like to hold on to our self-righteousness in all forms of hatred, because we feel justified in our hate towards another person. That person did that. They said that. They did that to me. Gives me the right to hate them. I'm justified. I'm righteous because I'm pointing out their faults. That's not what I heard from the cross when Jesus was hanging there. There's enough condemnation out there to go around for everybody. We heap it upon ourselves more than anything, typically, but we also respond and react and try to deflect it by pushing it off on someone. Well, I'm not that person. I'm not as bad as that person. That person's really evil. That's what really evil is. Look at me. I'm standing up against that person because I'm right. I'm on the righteous side. That person's... whatever. These are the people who have no self-reflection, no self-introspection, no self-awareness. Honestly, no honest self-awareness. So I want to ask the question. You can answer this if you will, however you choose. Does God love Donald Trump? Does God love Kamala Harris? Does God love Joe Biden? Whoever the nominee is going to be this time. Now there's the whole rabbit hole of how do we define love? Well, we know what it isn't. But love certainly tells the truth. Not in a harsh way, not in a brash way, not in a way that's, and sometimes the truth, you know, sometimes you just have to be quiet. Do these pants make my butt look big? Sometimes, you know, it's not the pants. It's the butt. However, don't say that out loud. just trust me on that one. Find something else to say. Look at those flowers. Look at the butterfly. Whatever you got to do. Light your hair on fire. Do something. Just don't answer that question that way. Okay. Now, having said that, speaking the truth in love. Not just speaking the truth, slamming it down somebody's throat. Because you know the truth, and you're going to slam it down their throat. Folks, there are people like that. They just have to say it because they know they're right. It's all about them again. Just being right is all more important than the relational aspect of the whole thing. Now, having said all of that, all I'm going to say is this. I don't think that Donald Trump is going to change his VP pick. One of the things that this person made a statement about was how Kamala Harris raised $200 million in so many hours or so many days or whatever it was. I believe, and I'm not sure on the numbers here, but I believe about $80 million of that was raised by an organization called Act Blue. Act Blue. What they do is they have all these people in this organization. They are given money, and about $80 million of that was given to this organization for the purpose of all these little different accounts. And usually, I think they have about, I don't know, it's several thousand people, maybe tens of thousands of people in this organization. And what they do is they each have several different accounts of like email accounts or identities, and they can donate to the campaign. Now, it'll be interesting to follow the money on this, but Donald, what's interesting about this to me is that Joe Biden had about $200 million in his war chest in cash. And all of a sudden, she raises $200 million. So I just have to wonder how much of this from Joe's campaign funding came from or went to the Kamala Harris fund. I'm sure if there's an investigation in any of this, the way this money's flowing up. Now, I have no doubt, you know, people, because the donors were very reluctant to donate to Joe Biden's campaign. They saw it as a losing battle, especially after the debate. Because up until then, Joe Biden was the best thing that ever happened in this country, and he was the most cogent, and F you if you can't handle the truth, best version of Joe Biden until the debate, and all of a sudden, we can't handle the truth. We better get somebody else in there. Well, he just had a bad night. And by the way, Donald Trump lies. Everybody came out with the talking points. And by the way, talking points. The Democrat, the DNC, actually hands out. Peter Ducey actually confronted Jean-Claude Pierre about this the other day. He said, I picked this up. This is the talking points from the DNC that all the news media on the left and all the members of Congress on the left are getting this talking points folder, what they should say when they're questioned about anything. This is how they're supposed to answer. This is, by the way, this is typical Marxist fascism. They are in lockstep. This is the way you have to answer. If you don't answer it this way, you're on the outs. Again, this is just the only truth is our truth. Legal speech is all you're allowed to do. And we'll determine what is legal speech and what is not. If you say anything outside that box, you are a whatever, racist, homophobic, fascist. But we're the fascists telling you what to say. Somebody shows up at... Anyway, a lot of wormholes can go down. Point I'm trying to make here is that the... chai is really good. That's what I'm trying to make a point. It's starting to cool off kind of quickly. Not sure what that's all about. So we have... Well, let's just move on. I'll give a quick update on the FBI investigation. There's more and more evidence showing that this... They had this guy pegged 90 minutes at least before Donald Trump took the stage. There's more video of this whole thing happening long before Trump was on the stage, and even after he was on the stage, why he was even allowed to go on the stage at this point, I have no idea. Part of the problem was, now they've interviewed the state, I think it was the state police officers or local police officers there in Pennsylvania. There's about a half a dozen or more, almost a dozen of them. And what they were saying, they had no way of communicating with the Secret Service. Now, keep in mind, my understanding is there was only three Secret Service agents there. Everybody else was Homeland Security, and they were contracted basically or supplemental from the Secret Service. But the Secret Service oversees it. They are in command. They're in control of everything that's going on there with regard to security. The buck stops with them. They're responsible for all this. Whether they employ or use local law enforcement or whatever they use, or Homeland Security, whatever they use, they're under their direction. So it's this whole operation is in charge. They're in charge of the entire operation for security. Now, the problem with this, and basically their main job is to secure the president's life. Nothing outside of crowd control or anything like that. They use state and local police for that kind of thing. They're in charge of the president's life. Now, he's not the president at the moment. He's a former president. He's a presumptive candidate, potential next. When Joe Biden gets 12 Secret Service agents, male, by the way, to guard her, I think on the same day at an event, Donald Trump gets 3. And then he has also the Homeland Security people, I believe those were the women who were involved. We don't know all the details on this whole thing. We won't. What amazed me, speaking of details, what amazes me is when Marjorie Taylor Greene gets up to ask the Cheadle about the timeline. Well, I have a timeline, but I don't have any details. Her answer was, I have a timeline, but I don't have any details. It doesn't have any details on it. What is that? That's like having a calendar with nothing written on it. Well, I know that at 1 o'clock, it was 1 o'clock. There's no details of what happened at 1 o'clock. I just know that at 1 o'clock, we definitely had 1 o'clock was 1 o'clock, and 1 o'clock then turned into 1:01. And then it was 1:02. So then after that, we know that 1:02 fell between 1:01 and 1:03. And then after 1:03, we knew that 1:05 was coming up, but we had to go through 1:04 before we got to 1:05. That's about as detailed as she got. Apparently that's all the details she had on her little timeline. Yep. What's a timeline without any? You have to have details on the timeline, or you have no timeline. I don't get that. And of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene said, "You are a failure," and a couple other choice words. I'm not sure what else she said. Now we're finding out more and more about this whole thing, and apparently obviously there was either incredibly gross negligent incompetence here, which I think Donald Trump should sue the Secret Service if they're this incompetent. This is like gross negligence. And the family, Corey's family, should sue them. Or the other option is they intentionally look the other way, hoping that this would happen. And even deeper than that, which of course goes into the conspiracy realm, which is not that much of a conspiracy when you think about what they did to JFK. Is that there was other nefarious actors in the shadows doing something about this, involved in this whole process. So, I will leave it at that. Not much I can do about it other than just vote and don't talk about my opinions on this podcast. And that's about all I can do. So, as far as, influence. Now, I can pray. And personally, I think that has more to do than anything. And of course, The biggest thing prayer does, 90% of the time, is changes my heart towards the situation, helps me get God's perspective on the situation. And typically, oh yes, now I have a different attitude, opinion, heart towards something or someone. So, as we move forward, I think it's very imperative, important that we pray. Now, there are things that happen, and I don't understand it. It's a mystery to me how this whole prayer thing works. But I know it's important. We were told to pray, and somehow we join in with God and His people when we do that. So, on our knees, we will continue to move forward, trusting in our God, not our government. Folks, God bless. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.